Production made possible in part by MedPlus Advantage.
You're listening to Radio Rounds, a talk show created and hosted by medical students and physicians in training, where today's stories are told by tomorrow's doctors. I'm Shami Das. Coming up on today's episode, we hear from a physician who has made it her life's work to advocate for her patients and colleagues through resident and physician unions.
So the more we create different paths and bust down the myths that in order to be in policy, you have to be there, you know, 100% of the time, mm-hmm. that you have to be an elected official, that you have to have an MPH, that you have to, you know, there are all these things, and it's awesome. I love the MD, MPH, MBAs. I think it's great to have our deck stacked that way. But the more, you know, what I feel is for every doc that wants to have a voice, there should be a way for them to have a voice. Mm-hmm.
Join us as we learn what motivates the current chair of the healthcare division of one of the most powerful unions in the country. Welcome to Radio Rounds. Today on Radio Rounds, you will hear my interview with Dr. L. Tony Lewis, a family physician and the chair of the Service Employees International Union's healthcare division. I had the opportunity to sit down with Dr. Lewis in Baltimore at the Committee of Interns and Residents National Meeting just a few weeks ago. Dr. Lewis advocates on behalf of 1.1 million residents, physicians, and allied health employees, and the largest division of the SEIU. She has been an active advocate for her patients and colleagues from the very beginning. Dr. Lewis completed medical school at Georgetown University and a residency training in family medicine in Brooklyn and Queens, where she lives now. Now let's hear what motivates this leader's commitment and devotion to social justice.
So I'm a family doc and geriatrician, and I decided after graduating Georgetown Medical School that I wanted to, you know, get in the trenches and safety nets. Like, that's where I wanted to do my training. So I found a great family medicine program in Queens, in Jamaica, Queens, New York, mm-hmm. at the St. Vincent System. And it turns out that not only was the community underserved and, you know, exhibited lots of healthcare disparities, but the hospital was also running out of money, mm-hmm. but that the members were all SEIU. And so actually 10 years ago, next month, in June, July of 2004, I started my internship in this, like, safety net petri dish for, you know, all things that are going wrong in our kind of safety net. So I became very vocal, because it was mm-hmm. crazy trying to treat patients in, like, this rich city in this rich country that are, you know, got stats of, like, the worst mm-hmm. of the worst. And I would get involved with the other docs who were CIR docs and the nurses and home care workers who were from the Union 1199, which is one of our big healthcare unions, and, you know, trying to work with management on, like, how can we fix this? This mm-hmm. can't be right. I just learned in med school that we can fix these things. But so, yeah, and being a family doc and geriatrician, you know, I was joking with you earlier, like, I get you coming in and going out. Like, I would always just kind of, I love talking to all healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. So when the International Union, which represents 2 million service workers across the country and Canada and Puerto Rico, found this kind of young black doc who came from the labor movement making noise, they were like, yeah, could you work with our other workers in other states? So it just, and around the same time, you know, so this is 04 to 07 that I'm in residency and 07 to 08 that I'm in fellowship. There were a few other things going on in healthcare at the time, right? I mean, it's, so really I am, like, affiliated with the largest healthcare union and the largest doctors union at the same time. We're talking about healthcare in a national conversation. It's a little bit, you know, kismet, crazy, synchronicity, that whole thing. But so all of those things lining up, you know, my background from Georgetown and being from rural America, it all just kind of lined up to be, you know, I feel like there's a moment for all of us to step up, you know, which many of us, many, many people did in 07, 08. You know, I think I've reflected on this more, especially as kind of elder people in my family start to pass away. And so I grew up in this area called Mound, Illinois, in southern Illinois, which is a town that is 5 hours south of Chicago and surrounded by actually what would be Confederate states at the time. And so a lot of racial disparities, unemployment, inequality. But, you know, my granddad was a community activist, you know, helped to try to create jobs and, you know, work with kids programs. My mom is the definition of a 60s child. She's a teacher, was doing high school and a Girl Scout counselor and was a labor union president and had me passing out sandwiches to teachers on strike when I was 7. Wow. She went to Howard University in the 60s during all of that time and, you know, kind of self-care, community service were just part of how she lived. My grandmother was a union teacher in Milwaukee and was the same. Like, you know, was doing gardens for the kids and participating in youth groups. And so there was a lot of building the community. My uncle was hanging out with the Black Panthers. So there was just this kind of politics make a difference, you know, kind of thing that floated in my family. But, you know, when I would go for my doctor's appointment and talk about fatigue, and it was really, you know, because of my female gynecologic issues, they just assumed that it was because I was, you know, doing drugs or having sex, and would tell my mom this and would tell me this and wouldn't even do blood tests, wouldn't even ask me about my cycle, you know. Yes, and I watched, you know, my granddad, Ulysses Bugs, was like, man's man, you know, strong handshake, drove a bus, built a house for his wife, took care of, you know, at the church every Sunday. You know, he was like a man's, you know, strong handshake, had my back. And I remember going to the doctor with him and him coming back and just looking like he was almost in tears because the medication was expensive and the doctor had talked to him like he was a child and he didn't know what was going on. And I'm like, this is some bull right here. Like, these things don't line up, you know. So people who were trying to, who were humans, first of all, myself and my family. And I'm like, let me, since I seem to have a little bit of an aptitude for science and healthcare, let me see if I can get on the other side of this.
To be a part of the solution rather than an outsider.
To be a part
perhaps.
Of the solution rather than yelling or being bitter about the problem on both ways, helping people like my granddad be more empowered, ask more questions, take more ownership of their health. And getting on the side of the profession and bringing some light and love and dignity and joy in that space too. So that's, you know, that's one arc of it. I have a couple of different interesting arcs.
What I'd like to talk to you about now is perhaps some of the inertia of getting physicians to become advocates. So I think, at least from my own observation, observations, it's a small breed, a small group of us, maybe like 10% or less, who actively get involved in advocacy, whereas it seems like 90% of graduating physicians and residents go into practice, and that they do the toil day in and day out, and we need that. But I don't think we have enough advocates. How do we increase that?
You know, I think... And I think you're right. I agree with you on that. There is like kind of a growing group of advocates. And, you know, one of the things, and I would consider myself part of that tribe.
Absolutely.
Especially in the last couple of years. And what's helped us to build in this space is creating more accessible ways for doctors to be advocates. So like, you know, if you can, and it's a great CIR model as well, like you can be a resident and just sign up to say you want to do something. And if there's 10 minutes to write an op-ed, then you're, you know, that's fine. I don't
that's
need
sufficient.
You to
right.
leave your practice and leave your patients and go to the Hill full time and be a lobbyist to do. You know, so I'm blessed both because I've been, you know, supported so much by my colleagues in geriatric medicine and, you know, that I've got good wind and a place to go whenever
Absolutely.
Things change.
Especially with the age of baby boomers. I mean,
the
you
age
will
of baby, I'm solid. I'm solid. I have stacked the deck. I'm solid. You know, but for...
Sure.
And but that's my path,
right.
You know? So the more we create different paths and bust down the myths that in order to be in policy, you have to be there, you know, 100% of the time, that you have to be an elected official, that you have to have an MPH, that you have to, you know, there are all these things, and it's awesome. I love the MD, MPH, MBAs. I think it's great to have our deck stacked that way. But the more, you know, what I feel is, for every doc that wants to have a voice, there should be a way for them to have a voice and do their practice. And I think prior to about 5-10 years ago, it wasn't so. Like either, you know, because I still hear from I'll say older docs here. I'm sure there's a more politically correct way, but docs of a different generation.
I've been told seasoned is a
seasoned.
Is a good
you
word.
Like seasoned? Let's go with seasoned. And I should know this as a geriatrician, right? Like seasoned, like fine wine. You know, I still hear from a sector of, you know, the old school docs
right.
that I don't have any street cred because mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, practicing right now. Mm-hmm. And then. You know, but then when I'm on the politics side, it's like, oh, my God, thank God you're in here. You're an actual doctor. You're an MD. But I do have a section of, you know, kind of the of people in my space who really just want to say you can't be. You need to make sure that you're doing, mm-hmm. you know, and I'd leave it open for whatever the year brings. But, you know, the more we need to bust down those myths of you can't have a voice until you.
Well, what about can't have the voice? But what about the perhaps obligation or the responsibility to have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
we doctors have been strong, influential figures
yeah.
throughout history in various societies and mm-hmm. cultures. Mm-hmm. How do we embrace that and make the most of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I feel a lot of it is, I mean, mm-hmm. when I was CIR president full time, you know, I felt a lot of it was embedded in kind of what were already like our core curriculum guidelines. I mean, how are we pretending to be competent in systems-based practice if we're not engaging in transformation of the system? You know, what is problem-based learning if your patients have these social determinants that you have?
Problems that you can't write a prescription for.
You know, 90% of what's yeah. going on with your patient's healthcare status, you know, doesn't have anything to do with the 15 minutes you get to spend with them. You know, and as a matter of fact, maybe working with you. So even just to be a competent physician, you know, whether it's research or raising the issue or advocating, there's a space there. Yeah.
Absolutely. And if I remember HBR, Harvard Business Review article written mm-hmm. by Dr. Thomas Lee from Partners in Boston
mm-hmm.
a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think the industry-wide, the estimate is about 1 in 10 maybe. So for every 10
yeah.
physicians, you have one advocate or leader amongst them. That's probably a good mix. You don't want too many chefs in the kitchen to.
That's right.
You know, to throw in a cliche there, but
you know, and that's one of the reasons why you know unions and working actively within your professional society are good models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because so and I like the union model for physicians, especially because there's democracy involved. You
mm-hmm.
know, there's dues, there's leadership, there's elections, there's you know voting on what you want to say. You know, where some of our professional societies are in different places in terms of their process of figuring out what they're going to do. And so, you know, CIR has 15,000. In SEIU, we have about 20,000 docs. We have attendings. And then we've got, you know, delegate bodies that are about 400 or 500 that reach out to all the docs in their areas
mm-hmm.
and figure out how to move forward. So it's one way, you know, it's one way to help that doc who's doing mental health care at Rikers Island to have a voice on mental health in the national landscape without them feeling like they have to abandon what their purpose was.
Well, so talk to us a little bit more in closing about physicians organizing.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that, so from my understanding, it's kind of complex in terms of what they're actually able to collectively bargain for and who they can bargain with.
Mm-hmm.
You are an expert in this area.
Am I? I'm just joking. go ahead.
I believe you're an expert in this
mm-hmm.
area. So
mm-hmm.
help our listeners understand some of the nuances perhaps of what doctors are able to do under the current laws and, you know, maybe what laws can be changed. What's the landscape look like right now for physicians who are looking to organize and collectively bargain or work together towards a greater cause?
Mm-hmm. It is actually a little bit complex right now, you know,
mm-hmm.
even for other service workers, just because, you know, laws differ from state to state,
mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're a right-to-work state or open shop, you know, that kind of thing in terms of how much you can organize and the steps you need to take. It all starts with a group of doctors deciding that they want to be unified as part of a union. And you can go to either CIR's website, which is CIRSEIU.org, or you can go to the Doctors' Council, which is our attendings arm, doctorscouncil.com, and look up Doctors' Council SEIU to get, you know, and someone can talk to you very specifically about what it would look like in your state,
mm-hmm.
In your shop, in your hospital. Because there are the kind of cultural aspects that we, you know, that we deal with in with unions and as professionals, you know, working with labor management issues, is this threatening your career? You know, but protections exist, you know, for people in this country that want to speak up for themselves. And I encourage every doctor who's interested in joining a union or starting a union to explore that plan and go to one of those websites and get a very specific plan for yourself. But yeah, it can be different, and it's interesting in, you know, countries like Canada where every resident is automatically part of a union. Like, really? So it's not a, you know, sure. I'm actually working with a group of folks around the world, around the country, to try to put out a journal, you know, that kind of shows the different physician organizing models and what they could possibly look like. But in my personal experience, it's so different state by state. I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but you know, right now, if you're a salaried employee in certain states, and you know, you can have certain protections to join a union. So I encourage everyone to reach out, go to those websites, and just, you know, expand your voice.
If I hear you correctly, the greater message seems to be to get involved, whether
yeah.
it's part of your professional organizations, mm-hmm. Depending on what the structures are for democracy, whether it be through a union. Mm-hmm. But don't sit back and rest on your laurels and not do anything.
I think that's
not really
right.
an option.
Yeah, it's not an option. And haven't you spent enough time and money, you know what I mean, blood, sweat, and tears, sacrifice time with your family to like sit back and have other people make decisions? I mean, you should always engage. And we would think of doing nothing less when we're making a clinical decision about our patients.
Why would we do this with our profession?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Apply those same principles of discipline and work and speaking up and making the decision. I say MD means make decision, you know, and get in there. Just get in there. Just go.
Dr. Lewis, it was a great pleasure speaking with you and hearing your story. Thank you for joining us on Radio Rounds.
And thanks so much for having me, and thanks so much for doing this. It's so helpful.
Welcome back. I'm Shami Das, and that was my interview with Dr. L. Tony Lewis at the National CIR meeting in Baltimore earlier this month. I hope you enjoyed my inspiring and insightful conversation with Dr. Lewis. You can learn more about her and the Committee of Interns and Residents at www.cirseiu.org. I'm confident that many of our listeners share some of the same motivations and passion that Dr. Lewis espoused in her interview. If you'd like to share more of your story or have a mentor or role model you believe should be on the show, simply drop us an email at contact@radiorounds.org. You can tweet us at Radio Rounds or visit our Radio Rounds Facebook page. Radio Rounds would also like to thank CIR for inviting us to lead a Doctors in the Media workshop at their Baltimore meeting. We especially like to thank Heather Appel and Safira Bell-Masterson. Thank you so much. Additionally, I'd like to congratulate the winners of the MedPlus Advantage Global Health Challenge. Team MedMujeres from the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine won the grand prize. They'll be traveling on one of the TIMI Global Health missions over the next year and will be awarded $10,000 towards the social mission of their choice. We had a pleasure attending the announcement party with MedPlus Advantage and TIMI Global Health in Chicago this past week and are extremely excited to hear about their global health experience. You can see their winning video and read their essay at www.radiorounds.org. Until next time, remember that you can download podcasts of all past episodes. Just search the iTunes store for Radio Rounds or visit www.radiorounds.org. You can also contact our team via email, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. All of that information at radiorounds.org.
Production made possible in part by MedPlus Advantage, providing group disability and life insurance to students and residents through participating educational institutions. Visit us at medplusadvantage.com.
AMA Insurance is pleased to introduce an individual disability insurance plan called Essentials for MedPlus Advantage participants. Through this plan, eligible graduating medical students have a special one-time opportunity to apply for high-quality individual disability insurance with no intrusive or time-consuming medical exams and only a few basic questions, and with discounted premiums. Apply now as the enrollment period ends soon. Of course, please remember that the views and opinions expressed on Radio Rounds are not representative of the views and opinions of the partners of Radio Rounds. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. We hope you have a great week ahead. For our entire staff here at Radio Rounds, I'm Shami Das, and one day, I'll be your doctor.